Good morrow, and welcome back to the realm. I am epic fantasy author J.V. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those of you marking your first adventure into my realm, this is my vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis. And each of those creatives specialize in a plethora of art forms. And as always, if you like what you hear, you can find me and my epic and dark fantasy books at www.jvhilliard.com. Or follow me at JV Hilliard Books on Twitter/X, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Or you can also look for me as JV Hilliard and just JV Hilliard on Facebook and Discord. So as we reach our witching hour tonight, let me thank our sponsor, Altered Reality Magazine. You can find them at alteredrealitymag.com. And they are a first portal to publication for many authors. And they also feature a number of award-winning authors of speculative fiction and speculative poetry. And speaking of poetry and speculative fiction, today we'll be chronicling the adventures of a fellow speculative fiction scribe, Adam G. Fleming. Adam is an author, and one note, fun fact, was a one-time strawberry farmer, which we'll get into in a minute. Adam, well met, and welcome to the realm.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, JV. It's great to be here.
Cool, man. Well, look, tell our listeners about you, what you write, and where they can find you.
Okay, great. I write a pretty broad variety of different genres. I have a few nonfiction books out. I have a poetry chap book. And then I have a couple of series. So one of the series we definitely want to talk about a little bit tonight for sure is the Satchel Pong Chronicles. It's sort of a steampunk sci-fi fantasy mashup of complete five-book series, starting with the first book, Satchel Pong and the Great Migration, and there's four more, so we'll talk about that probably, and then there's the Stetson Jeff Adventures, which I have co-authored with a good friend of mine named Justin Fike, and Stetson Jeff is a character, I've been describing it lately as a modern American tall tale. So it jumps the shark for sure, but it's Stetson Jeff is like this sort of cross between Walker Texas Ranger and Forrest Gump and Inspector Clouseau and Asterix. Travels the world in pursuit of justice and a good piece of steak. And we just finished putting the sixth and final ebook on Amazon last weekend. So that's pretty exciting. And then,
series, man, you had me at steampunk. Tell us a little bit about, let's start out with that. I was going to start out asking you about writing in multiple genres, but forget that. When you're the first person that I've had on the show that has written something that's steampunk-ish, and I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
So let's dig a little deeper there. Tell everybody about Satchel Pong and the series. Let's start with that.
You bet. I forgot to say where they can find me, so let me say that right at the top here. It's
adamgfleming,
and that's Fleming with one M, .com. adamgfleming.com. Satchel Pong. Okay. So I'm working on this other book, right? I've been working on it for 10 years, and at one point I've got – it's more like set in the real world, right? And I'm like, there's a rock band here. So they need something to sing about that's sort of weird and to do, because I wanted them doing sort of hairband metal, but concept albums like the late 70s. So I invented this character who's sort of a hermit, lives in the woods, and he writes, back in the 80s, he writes this steampunk story, and I wrote about 85% of it. And then just stuck it in a file. So I wanted this story to be a story that this rock band makes up songs about. Like they find the book in a used bookstore, you know, and they're like, hey, this is really cool. Let's write some songs and do a concept album. And I came back to it, I don't know, 8 months later, and I read that 85% of book one, and I was like, dang, this is pretty good. I should finish this book and put it out there. And the next thing I know, I had a five-book series. So I'm still working on the other book that this five-book steampunk series sets the context for. That's kind of my work in progress right now. But it ended up – so Satchel Pong is living in a world where things are getting gradually hotter. It's like a global warming type thing. And I'm not a global warming campaigner. This thing does not have like an agenda or anything, but it's just like a what if, right? What if the world was, we're experiencing it, you know, now, but what if it was 10 times worse? Like every year we were starting to see like crops failing and stuff like that. So it's just a what if. And then Satchel Phong has to sort of figure out, he's a meteorologist, and he has to figure out what's he going to tell his people and try to, you know, have some sort of leadership in his community and say, we should try to move to a different part of this planet because it's not working out here. So that's where it begins. And since it's got, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a question about whether or not they're even going to have to travel off world if they're going to survive. So that's that series in a nutshell.
You know, that's interesting because you wrap up some social dilemma stuff, which people like to talk about. It gets people's blood, you know, churning one way or the other. And like you said, you're not an apologist, right, by any stretch of the imagination, yeah, but it's a good issue, especially something that's steampunky in the sense that there's always a dystopian connectivity to that kind of
right, writing,
and, you know, and whether right, it's like Ready Player One, where the world's so polluted and, you know, everybody's jammed it, overpopulated, or in this case,
yeah,
you've got a climate dilemma. And it's one
right, that
I think everybody is at least aware of, if not worried about,
right, you
know, in real time. That's really cool. What kind of commercial success has it brought you? Have you found, because you said how many books are in the series? Five?
Five, yeah.
Yeah, is this your most popular work? Is you know, are people begging for more here? What are you going to do with it?
Oh yeah, people are begging for more. There's a character in the fifth
That's
book.
That's great, man. Congrats.
Who comes in a Wilty Zeebo? There's a character Wilty Zeebo, and I dropped a hint that I will write some Wilty Zeebo, like a spin-off series. I'm hoping to get into the first book of that next year. So, I mean, it's December, so that's pretty soon now.
By the way, what a great name. Satchel Phong, Wilty Zeebo. I mean, come on, man. Those are great, great names. Unforgettable.
So I have Satchel Phong and the Search for Emil Ennis, which is a fun one. And then I have Antoinette Zhou, which is like X-H-O. And then I have the fourth book is called St. Kipstifer and the Miraculous Yarkarma. And then the fifth one is called The Prophets of Doom and the Flying Hedgehog. So
all right,
wait.
I got to stop you. I got to stop you. I saw your author logo, and it looked like a hedgehog. And,
right,
and when I read the titles of the novels when I was doing my research on you, I saw the name. Is there a significance to the hedgehog that really means something to you, or is that just something that it's accidental here?
I think it's okay. So I've got this author tagline, right? It's walking the fine line between the absurd and the sublime. And I think that's what a hedgehog is to me, is like, it's this absurd little creature, but it's also incredibly beautiful. Like I saw a YouTube video of some hedgehog in Kazakhstan that there's like super ultra venomous snake that this thing is so quick, it can snap the snake's neck and then just eats it. And you can watch it on YouTube, like chowing down on this venomous snake. I'm like, dang, that's a ridiculous, cute little thing. And it's so deadly. And it's like, it's all of my writing, even if it's the nonfiction stuff, will sort of center around this perspective on the world. I don't write, it's a dystopian world, right? Satchel Phong's dystopian world, but it's not like, I'm more of a humor writer. I'm not a dark dystopian writer. Like I love China Mieville's stuff, you know, but that's not me. I'm more like, there's something funny about it. You know, there's in Satchel Phong, like there's a lot of examples of people just kind of dancing while the world burns. Like they're just like sort of ignoring the problem. And I think that's, you know, exploring human nature like that. So that's where the hedgehog kind of comes in for me, is like, it's just this cute, adorable, deadly, sublime creature, you know. So I think they're cool. I don't own one, although I kind of wish I did. But
I was going to say, it sounds like you will one day. I'll take that.
If I got to get that past my wife. I'm not the boss.
Oh yeah, that's always a curveball. You know, they're always trade offs too. Like I did skydiving.
Yeah, right.
She got a tattoo. That's how it went. So
yeah,
you know,
that's right.
You just gotta, you know, suck it up and pick one for the team. So
right.
Well, let me switch gears on you for a little bit here, because I find there, we had, in all the shows I've done, I've only had on one other writing coach. And I know that you do some of that professionally. Many of our listeners are readers, obviously, or else they wouldn't be listening to the show. But a lot of them are writers or are aspiring writers. And so as a writing coach, what piece of advice would you give to an aspiring writer, and which piece of advice would you give to a veteran writer?
Oh, that's good. Okay. The main thing for the aspiring writer is that being a writer is a state of being. It's not about what you do. And what I mean by that is, like, there's a whole difference between who am I and what are the things that I do. So it's an identity piece, right? So in other words, if I say I'm a writer, whether I've published or not, I am a writer, whether I am writing right now or doing a podcast interview or, you know, taking a walk or brushing my teeth, I'm a writer. So when you start to embrace that aspect of identity, right, that I know I'm a writer, then you stop kicking yourself when you're not writing, and you stop, but at the same time, you don't have to, like, hinge everything on, did I write something great, or was I commercially successful, or did I get a rejection slip again, you know? Like that, none of that, all that ceases to matter. You're just a writer. And so you write when you have time to write. And there have been times, I put out my first book in 2012. There have been times when I go 8 months without really doing much. Partly that was because I was living in Egypt for 8 months and I had other work to do, you know. But anyway, so that's what I would say to an aspiring writer is, maybe just take the word aspiring out and just be a writer and do the things that writers do, which is write when you have space for it, and don't kick yourself when you don't. Veterans?
Yeah. Guys that have been around the block for a while that just needed a piece of advice, maybe something they haven't heard, something that you can use, you know, and that way it's, you know, honed to someone who's looking for that one nugget of wisdom you can pass along tonight.
I got one. There's something that bugs me about, like, really super successful writers. Sometimes you'll notice that they seem like they forgot to have an editor look at their work because they've been so commercially successful that they're like, I don't really need that anymore. And it's like, no, this book could have been 50 pages shorter. This is more like what I would hope that people would just continue to embrace the fact that you need outside perspective to make the best book that you can, and always give an editor the respect that they deserve and let them do their job. And don't let up on that just because you've become a much better writer at the craft and at the, you know, all the skills are there and stuff. And, you know, Grammarly is there, and it's easy to just, like, plug it into a machine now and go, the grammar's probably pretty good, let's put it out. That's my personal take, is, like, still have somebody look at it.
Well, you know, you're tap dead center, bang on with that. I have found that even though I hate, and I mean hate, the editing process, it is so necessary and it makes the book so much better. In part, it's because you're sharing it. And let's face it, I mean, authorship these days, it's not a one-man sport. This is a team sport.
No.
You've got a copy line editor, you've got a development editor, you've got a final editor, you've got a publisher sometimes. If you're not an indie person, you've got beta readers in some cases where people are reading to your genre and not just reading for errors in your plot lines or your commas, you know, positioning for your parentheses, you know. And I find that when it comes out on the other side, I liken it to going to the dentist. Like, you don't, no one wants to go to the dentist. You go to the dentist, you leave there, and all of a sudden you're like, you know what? My teeth feel really clean. I feel good. There's no cavities. I'm good to go. right? And then you know you're ready for prime time. You can go out there with a pearly white smile. And that's what editing does. Yeah. And I tell that because I know a lot of new first-time authors fear it because they're afraid of constructive criticism. But editors are on your team. Yeah. They're part of your team. They're,
right.
they're trying to help you create a better product. And you couldn't have offered a more sage piece of advice tonight. And I thank you for that. Let's stick on the topic for one other second on your writing coach stuff. As someone who does that, do you find it difficult to switch on and off from your writer's hat to your coaching hat, or is it something that's just natural? You're proficient at it now. You've been doing it so long, it's easy to do. Do you find yourself looking at someone's stuff and trying to rewrite it for them?
I think of coaching maybe in a little different light. I went through a leadership coach training program back in 2008 and 2009. Which is 3 years before I published my own first novel. So I've been a leadership executive coach for longer than I've been a novelist.
Oh, nice.
A lot of my coaching is really about getting around the roadblocks that we were talking about for the novice authors and helping people with sort of the identity side of it. I do some ghostwriting too. And my wife does some editing and proofreading and stuff, but I wouldn't cross over like coaching to looking at somebody's manuscript and giving advice on the manuscript itself. That would be like a totally separate discipline, I would say. So mutually exclusive. So I don't have any trouble switching from being an author and working on my own book over here on an actually separate laptop than what I do Zoom calls on, it's not a problem for me.
Now I've got another question. This might come out of left field. But as I was looking at your bio, your website and things, I see that obviously you write poetry, you write novels, both nonfiction and fiction. But there was something on your site that I'm not sure all of our readers know what this means. And you said that you like to write flash fiction. What is flash fiction? Can you define that for our listeners tonight so that they know what it is so they can look for it and maybe even try their hand at it?
Yeah, it's I think the short story, what would you say the short story definition is, like maybe 7,000 to 10,000 words? Ish.
Right around that. I'd say you could stretch it to 15, but I think I'm 10 and under, right, where I would put it.
Right, right. So my understanding of flash fiction is it could be less than 1,000 words. So in my book that's called Vortex Street, there are travel poems and there are flash fiction. So they're just like I had an idea, and I wrote a story that's kind of somewhere between poetic prose and a short story. One of them actually would be the perfect length for a children's book, but it's not, I didn't write it as like this would be a great children's book, but I've always kind of thought like it'd be fun to take that, tinker with the script a little bit and send it to an illustrator, but illustration costs money. So,
speaking of illustration,
my understanding of flash fiction is like 500 to 2,000 words.
All right. So, but speaking of illustration here, I'm gonna pivot a little bit because Beatdown in Bangkok. It's like Yosemite Sam meets a karate movie. It looks so good. Right. I haven't read them yet, but when I saw the covers, I was like, oh my God, I have to get this book. I have to read these. Tell us a little bit about what Beatdown in Bangkok is. And it looks like it's a series. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, that's the Stets and Jeff adventures. So, Stets and Jeff Beatdown in Bangkok. I'll tell you the origin story real quick. Justin and I were at a conference in Thailand. We got up early one morning, 7 o'clock, got some coffee, and went out and sat on the beach and watched the sun come up. And there were some people from Texas at this conference, and neither of us are from Texas, but my grandparents used to live there. And so I've visited Texas a lot. I was like, what do you think it's like for a Texan the first time they come to Thailand? And we started riffing on a character who's like, his family was the Stetson Hat people. And his dad is like thinking about getting their jeans made in Thailand, but, you know, because they can save money. But so he goes over to check it out and, you know, basically finds a sweatshop and like, is this ethical and stuff? Next thing you know, he's like in a kickboxing tournament. And so it's like throwback to, it's set in the late 80s. It's throwback to movies like Karate Kid and Bloodsport and Crocodile Dundee and that kind of stuff. And then there's that. So that's why we always say he's a little Walker, Texas Ranger. But he's also sort of an idiot savant. So he's kind of like a Forrest Gump. And then as the series develops, he uncovers this sort of shadow organization called ASP, you know, and he's trying to like get to the bottom of what they're all about and are they running drugs and are they doing this and what's all going on with ASP. And so he ends up traveling all over the world. We've got books that he goes to Thailand first, obviously, and then Morocco and then Amish country in Pennsylvania and then Belize in Central America and then Spain and then Oxford University. And of course, it's got to end in Dallas. So it's a lot of fun. And the first Stetson Jeff book, The Beatdown in Bangkok, is our my most successful book so far. It's always staying up there pretty well on Amazon. And actually, that's the book that we want to give away to the readers tonight. So I'm glad you love the artwork. My friend, close friend, Mark Daniels lives in my town. We've been buddies for 20 plus years, and he's a fantastic artist, did that work for me. So,
well, first of all, thank you very much for the kind gesture. For those of you who are listening, Adam wants to give away a free book, and you'll be able to find a link to that on my website, on the social media stuff that comes out tomorrow with a link to this show. And also, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at joe@jvhilliard.com. And I'd be more than happy to pass that along to you. I'm telling you, just for the cover's sake, it's worth having. And I can't wait to get into these things because the way you described it, it's sort of like this Forrest Gumpish misanthropic adventure from these guys that, like, you know, it's like around the world in 80 days. It just seems like a fun book to read, man. Like I'm dying to get there.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad. Yeah. And I will thank you on behalf of the show and the readers.
Yeah, sure.
that do download it. I'm looking forward to reading it myself, and thank you for that. And look, we're getting to the end of the show here, and I do this with all of my guests. We have a quick lightning round. We're asking you some quick questions, you know, you can give me some quick answers. Some of them are one word, some of them are one sentence, some of them are 1 minute long. But I want to throw some questions at you, have a little fun. Are you ready to enter the lightning round, Adam G. Fleming?
I am ready.
All right. First question, I'll start you off with a softball. So on your site, in your bio, you say that you grew up as a child on a strawberry farm, but they're not your favorite fruit, but you must have eaten more strawberries than anybody in the world. You know, if strawberries are out, what is your favorite fruit?
I'm probably going with blueberries.
Well, that's almost completely opposite of strawberries. So I can see why. I used to work at a Burger King, and it took me 10 years to eat at a Burger King again. So I think I get the point there.
I ate more strawberries than anybody listening to this show by the time I was 10.
I do not doubt that for a second. And I was I had a German grandfather, and he had a patch of what he called Erdbeere, which is basically the German word for strawberries.
Yeah.
I was always out there plucking the strawberries and eating them and helping him tend his Erdbeere patch. So, like, for me, I'm a big strawberry guy. But, you know, blueberries, you can't go wrong with them either. But second question. As an author, what is the best money you've ever spent and why?
Oh, shoot. Editing. Editing on my first novel. Partly because I got a friends and family discount, but just because what I was saying earlier, What I was saying earlier about how important it is to edit. When I went through the editing process on my first novel, I realized how important it is to have a team. So that's probably my best answer.
All right. Next question. You're invited to a lunch with one other author, or living or dead. Who would that author or poet be, and why?
Kurt Vonnegut. Kurt Vonnegut, I read in John Irving's autobiography or something that Kurt Vonnegut was his mentor at the Iowa Writers Workshop, and he told him, John, capitalism is going to be good to you someday. And he was dead on right about that, and I'd like for him to say that to me.
Yeah.
I wish he was
alive.
Right,
well, hey, look, one last question here in the lightning round before we wrap things up. So, and I'm going to guess I know where this is going. I might be wrong. We'll see. But you're walking down the street and you see a library burning and you rush in to help. And when you're in there, you realize you can only save one book and the rest are going to perish in the flames. Which book do you grab to save and why do you grab it?
Probably if they have a copy of my own book.
That's a cheater question, a cheater answer, but I'll take it. It's allowed. I didn't say you couldn't. So, hey, man, you know, take advantage of it if you can. Well, which of your books would it be?
If it's the last library on earth, let's just go with Huckleberry Finn.
Okay. It's okay to pick your own book. It's all right. I understand. You got to save it somewhere, but Huckleberry Finn.
It was a joke.
We'll slide with that, brother. It's all right. We're all good. Well, look here, we're coming to the end of the show, and you know, I want to take time to thank you for being back on. For those of you who have spent time listening, go check out Adam G. Fleming's stuff. Adam, where can they find your stuff? Remind them one last time, and where can they find you on social media?
AdamGFleming.com, on Instagram, Adam_G_Fleming. Facebook, I've got an Adam G. Fleming. So, yeah, just keep throwing the G in there and you'll find me eventually. Amazon, Adam G. Fleming, author page. Thank you.
Well, Adam, hey, man, thanks again for being on the show tonight. We appreciate you coming on The Realm. Do you have any works in progress you want to plug before we leave?
Nothing that's going to come out super soon, but I am still working on that book about the rock and roll band, so just keep watching for stuff in the future.
Well, you got it, brother. Well, look, thanks again for being on The Realm. We appreciate it. And to our followers out there, thanks again for lending us your ear this evening. And until next time, I am JV Hilliard, and may your gods go with you. Thanks again, Adam.